I'm Jeannie.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Nikki from Tyrion's Landing,
a podcast member of the Gonna Geek Network,
just like the one you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual.
Check out all the other podcasts at GonnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in...
3, 2, 1...
Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten. Did you just say womp womp? And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Flashy lights, Christmas, woo!
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again. Welcome to episode 150 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we accidentally step into a rift in time spawned by urine, stale beer, and karaoke, come across ourselves from 30 minutes in the past, and then hide in a broom cupboard and wait for the possibility of mass murder, or our own rise to near godlike status, to blow over. Typical weekend, really. I am Jay, and with me in the GPR studios this week is Keir. How are you doing, Keir?
I'm feeling quite comfortable in my place in space and time.
And Haley, how are you tonight?
Less comfortable in my place in space, but I guess acceptable at my place in time.
Good to know.
Well, this week we question the wisdom of using the loo at the quarter pub for more reasons than usual, as we discuss the work of Doctor Who writing alum Jamie Matheson in the 2009 film Frequently Asked Questions About Time Travel. Spoilers, we really enjoyed it. Being the Imagineers we are.
I prefer Imagineers.
And Disney is going to sue us for using that term.
I had that same thought when I heard it. Like, wait, that's already taken, isn't it?
Yeah, they probably... Well, I don't know. Did you ever see them trademark that thing? I don't know. It still surprises me, even as we were leading into this, how many people this film had slipped past.
Mm-hmm. Me?
Including yeah, Haley.
Me too.
wasn't a huge production when it was first released. I mean, we were kind of just discussing this before we started recording tonight. It was almost like it was a pet project. Short thing, like 81 minutes long. Really just feels like something that could have been done in a little comedy miniseries or something. You could have broken it up into two or three installments and
written on the back of an angry letter to Hollywood execs that you left on the table at the pub.
Right, right. Well, you know, sets all kinds of things in motion. It's like butterflies. You got to be careful with those butterflies.
Yeah, I mean, this was a really fun movie. And full disclosure, I had never seen it before we sat down to watch this. I knew about it and I knew the basic premise and things like that, but I'd never actually sat down and been able to watch it all the way through. And I've got to say, this is probably my favorite time travel movie now. Like, it's fantastic. Okay.
I didn't realize that both. I figured Haley, because she's got weird gaps in her viewing history.
I finished this movie 16 minutes ago. What more do you want?
Nothing.
She got it done.
Ahead, you know, 16 minutes ago could have been 16 years from now. You don't know. But no, I forget how I came across this a while back. But it seems like, you know, I mean, we're looking at something that is now 6 years old, and it's still just kind of barely kind of pings on a lot of people's radar for time travel related science fiction films. But it's got such great elements. I mean, you can tell that this is somebody like Matheson who has put some thought into playing around with the mechanics and the manipulations of time travel.
Yeah. And I mean, it really shows too, because it's one of those things that you get a lot of the, you know, the little things where if you need the little nod to, you know, the accepted theory or something like that, or one of the things that, you know, when he starts talking about chaos theory, and they don't need to go into it, but you get enough of the feel for it to understand, okay, this is taken into account and there's this and there's that. And I mean, the whole grandfather paradox that gets played throughout, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And But the great thing about it is being first and foremost a comedy. You know, we were talking about the idea of, you know, when it comes to dramatic science fiction, about making sure that if you're using some sort of, you know, theoretical conventions, don't go too far into the science or things of that sort. But the same thing with a comedy, definitely don't go too far into the science. Mm-hmm. And I think Matheson does a good job of knowing when to pull the brake.
Yeah.
You know, and just give enough to say, all right, we're tipping our hat to all the nerds out there who love this stuff. But like, even the fact that we never really get an explanation as to how the bathroom is doing what it's doing.
That's a time leak.
Yeah. Yeah, they said that. They explained it perfectly.
Yes, of course. And that's all you need. Just put the word time in front of it. You have a time scoop, time leak, time poop. It's all.
They need a time pooper scooper to clean up the time mess.
But there are so many tips of the hat to so many time travel aspects. I mean, you know, you get it right from the first couple of minutes, you know, when they're talking about, you know, what would your ideal job be? No, you're not an astronaut. You're real. If you could have any job, Time Lord.
Yep.
You know, and references to Ripley from Aliens and what are some of the other things? Oh, if you see, like they do looking at their watch, the kind of Marty McFly.
Back to the Future thing, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they also said maybe we become famous for being in a band. Can any of us play music?
Uh-huh. Yeah, all kinds of great stuff.
It's almost like it ties it all together. Wow.
Wow. Jay almost knew what
Jay masterminded this entire thing.
Brilliant.
Sure.
But did he remember to wind his watch?
Ironically, no. Laying on the desk in front of me dead.
But some interesting stuff that I found out as I was doing some background research on this. The pub that they're in through this entire thing, the White Horse, is an actual pub. They didn't shoot it on location or anything, but it is an actual pub where science fiction writers like Arthur C. Clarke and John Christopher actually used to have reading sessions for the public.
Nice.
So just kind of interesting that, you know, this is Matheson was really, you know, kind of plunging deep on some of his references just in the script. And then the set designers and props did things too. They had there were like movie posters that they were passing when they were going by the movie theater. And you had things like Back to the Future and Planet of the Apes, and those movie posters were the ones that were on the display under the marquee. So, a lot like, I don't know if either of you watched the Fringe series all the way through?
Yes.
Not okay, so you know the set dressers there always got a huge kick out of putting all kinds of Easter eggs on the set.
Right. Like
that. Especially when they started getting into alternate timelines. They loved doing that stuff. So this seemed like another one of those kind of efforts.
And it really is great when you get the kind of people that pay attention to that detail. And it's like, you know what? You might not, like, this could be something that goes completely missed. Nobody will catch it. But if there's that one person that sees it, it's going to be worth it. Mm-hmm. And having those kind of people behind, you know, behind an endeavor like this is just always fantastic because it comes through. Even if you don't catch every reference, the fact that you can feel it in there, basically. It's great.
Yeah. So you've got, They seem to, because of the fact that we're dealing with something where, you know, very similarly to certain angles approached in Doctor Who, you've got the paradoxes that are threatening, right? So you've got, you know, your equivalent of time agents going back to do cleanup detail and such. But there's one of the things that I really enjoy about any of these kind of time manipulation films is where you're getting the payoff before the setup.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting glimpses of things that make absolutely no sense at the time, and you don't get the relevance until far later in the viewer's chronology.
Yeah.
So changes of haircut and stuff.
Well, and you know, even then you've got the stuff that's almost hidden that you don't even realize you miss until you get to the end. You know, like with Ray wearing the red hoodie at the bar. You know, mm-hmm. Okay, so there's random person at the bar. And then you get to the end of the movie and you realize, holy crap, that was him. And I didn't even know I missed it, you know, or it's things like that make it fun to go back and rewatch these things over and over again.
Right. So, but then there's enough, because as I'm saying that, you know, they left a lot of the science out of it. They also left a lot of the explanation out of it about things that had happened like in the future. What was that dystopian, you know, ash covered society with the giant ants and whatnot? what actually led that to happen? But as long as you got a decent bag of crisps you can snack on, I guess you're gonna be okay. But you know, there's just, but it just doesn't, it leaves enough so that you can, on future viewings, and that's kind of where I was, I think, when I rewatched it maybe last week or so, I realized I've gone through this maybe four or five times, and I'm still catching little things about, All right. So yeah, all right. I see what they could have left for themselves there. Mm-hmm. But then you get hung up on things like, you know, the whole bathroom routine of the pushing the sink handles and using the air dryer and having to say, I love the sequence where they realize that in order to save time, it's better if they all just grab each other's hips and go through the dance ones. I mean, on a comedic level, this is I'd like to find more of Matheson's scripts that really allow him to exercise his humor, because this is a funny freaking movie.
Oh yeah.
Science aside.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing, is it's done in such a way that the science doesn't really matter. You know, you can accept it and move on and not get hung up on it, and it's an enjoyable story regardless. So if you tried to put more science into it, then you wouldn't be able to enjoy the rest of it nearly as much.
With time travel stories, the technology is less interesting than the mechanics of time travel, which is still kind of science in there. It's just the more interesting story-wise part of that.
Yeah, I felt the same thing. Like, take Looper was one where, you know, they gave just enough explanation to say that it was happening, you know, climbing into the sphere and so forth. But they didn't really want to dwell on it much, because it was far more interesting to see the repercussions of the time overlaps and things.
No, and I mean, I think that's what the basics of it is. Is it's okay. We don't care what vehicle you take to get to the past. We understand the concept of time travel. You go from here, you end up there, and then things can change. And that's not the interesting thing. We don't want to see, okay, here's 45 minutes explaining how this works. We don't care. We know you go and you get there, and it's the thing. And you want to see how everything plays out at that point, because, I mean, let's face it, this is a fantasy setting. There's no way of knowing what it is, like how it actually is. There's no set laws of time or anything like that. So it's something that we can play with, and it, you know, it becomes a thought experiment. So you can mess with it, and you can say, but what if, or how about if this happened, or things like that. So it's fun, and it engages your brain much more than like, well, this is, you know, where we insert the alternator that powers the thing, and nobody wants that.
Yeah. Did you ever wonder, though? I mean, we were like making a little bit of a connection to Bill and Ted, because they were talking about creating a band. But did you ever wonder, along that similar sort of level, what it was that they came up with that changed the future or that made them famous?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it still bugs me. I'm like, but what was it? I want to know. But I mean, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter.
No.
But I feel like it's one of those things where when you get a group of people talking at a bar, somebody's like, what if we had this thing? And everyone else is like, you're an idiot. That's stupid.
Yeah.
It's just one of those kind of ideas.
And the one sober guy at the end of the bar writes it down and slinks off into the shadows.
And creates MySpace.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that's the fun thing, though, is that we've all had those conversations. We've all had the experience leading up to this. Where, you know, you're messing around with your friends and you're all just having a great time joking around, and then somebody gets up and goes to the bathroom. You know, it's like, well, we've all had that experience, and that's where things take a turn. And, you know, it's fun to kind of have that, like, wow, how could this play out for me kind of thing.
I think one of the aspects of it, of the film that I thought was just kind of interesting, because it kept clunking intentionally. It was like one of those things that was supposed to pull off, you know, so cool, and when it was not cool, that made it more cool, was Cassie's, like, fake it till you make it. This entire thing. She's completely unprepared for everything. Even the second time around when you see her, and, like, you know, she read the manual this time kind of thing. But she's still just skating by on minimal information here. I love that.
I mean, it kind of reminds you of a certain dashing time agent that we know.
Oh, Captain John? Sure. He was a putz.
Yeah. So the way that this plays out is it's more just along the lines of, this is the things that are set in motion, and you can't really change it until you get to the end, and there's one thing that happens that could have possibly been a part of the whole thing the whole time, but then it erases everything. So it's almost like it's a nice mash between the two different kind of repercussions that we've looked at in the previous weeks, where, you know, you've got you can go back and change something, but it's all going to play out the same way anyway. And it's a weird hybrid.
Yeah. Well, they step around it by saying alternate timeline. So when he changed something, he produced an alternate timeline, and that's what they woke up in.
Right. Well, yes. sort of. A lot of things ended up just resolving themselves, or sort of the inalterable path, mm-hmm. because they had seen where they're, and everything, regardless of their efforts, just kept bringing them to exactly the realization until your final little stinger, you know, yeah. which was great.
But the thing is, it's this is one of those things where instead of getting hung up on, you know, how is this playing out and how trying to figure out exactly what it is that's really going to happen or how it's actually happening or whatever, you're enjoying the ride. And that's one of the best things I can say about this movie is it's, you don't get hung up on stuff like that because it's just so much fun that stuff that normally would stick in our craw as Whovians that, you know, we'd rant and rave about and complain about on the internet for like, you know, 3 weeks until another episode came out and we got hung up on that one. Like here, it just doesn't matter. We move right past it because, hey, you know what? It was fun.
Right. Well, that gets me to, I think my big takeaway from this film in general is, and it's kind of an appreciation on a very meta level, because think about what this movie centers on. It's three guys having a very dorky conversation in a pub. Mm-hmm. Right. They should be chatting about anything else under the sun. You got one guy who's just unemployed. You know, they're all without significant others and so forth. And they're kind of sad sack lives. And yet they're discussing science fiction and their various degrees of nerdery. And everything that happens in the film and the fact that it's all sort of disjointed to me seems like the result of three guys sitting there saying a what if, what if, what if, and building this scenario as they were sitting in a pub, mm-hmm. arguing over, yeah, well, what if the, you know, if this mysterious time traveler came back and she was actually, you know, and we ended up becoming the, you know, the centers of the whole, the, you know, the vertex of the whole thing because of some amazing idea we had. But instead of getting too serious, or when one of them starts to get really serious about the technical aspects of, no, you can never get away with that, his other two mates crack some joke, undermines the whole conversation, and sets you off on another path again.
Yeah.
It's almost as if the film is that extended hypothetical.
Yeah, that kind of works, actually, yeah.
Beer-fueled and you know, and stock full of references to other science fiction material because they don't have an original thought in their head, except for the, what was it, the yodeling monks?
Yodeling ninjas.
Yeah. Yodeling ninjas. That was an original thought.
And for not very good reason.
Good original thought, but...
It's two conflicting sides of himself.
That was the idea that made all the money.
That could have been it. It could have been a huge franchise that changed the future and yeah. got them spray painted on walls.
So, you know, I would love to see that. I would love to see Matheson bring this kind of humor to Doctor Who and like put this into an episode, or, you know, even this kind of story where, you know, maybe it's the Dr. Light story where it's the person that's, you know, everything is happening to. Like the doctor keeps on bouncing in and out of his life, changing things and trying to fix it and all of this stuff. You know, have it be from the perspective of the person sitting there watching it all play out.
Right.
I mean, it could work really well.
I think, you know, in retrospect, I went back and I sort of speed watched Flatline and Murder in the Orient Express just to see if I could pick up on some of Matheson's other sort of humorous influences. And, you know, and you do get some of them, maybe a little bit more so in Flatline because obviously the shrinking TARDIS setup and there's a lot of visual gags that kind of go along with that. But there's some funny material that just starts from that whole odd routine before you start getting into the suspense and the boneless and so forth. And it really gets genuinely freaky. Orient Express didn't really have a lot of the humor because it just didn't have the right place for it in terms of where the characters were in their relationship at that point in the season, but it had some warmth. So personally, you know, looking forward, knowing that we're going to have, you know, more material from Jamie in series 9, I'm hoping he gets an opportunity to sort of incorporate those multiple aspects as well. Get a little bit of the heart, a little bit of the humor, mm-hmm. a lot of the suspense, you know, some of the terror involved, you know, and have a nice well-rounded script in general, now that we know that he's fully capable of handling any of these sort of tacts.
Got a promotion.
That's what you're taking away from this.
Well, I got off probation.
Yes. Well, it's kind of the same thing.
Can I just say, yep. This is my last thought on this thing, is I loved Chris Dowd's opening sequence in the space simulator thing, freaking yes. out the first graders. That was classic.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
making the kid throw up because he's hitting the panic button.
All right, what do we got on the news this week?
Speaking of mysteries and things that go without explanation, there was one little tidbit dropped by the BBC's official Doctor Who Instagram account. They threw an image out there of a sort of a schematic diagram of some mysterious contraption that has absolutely no semblance to anything. You know, it just looks like a prop master's initial pencil sketch of something, but done on a chalkboard. And they're actually taunting viewers, readers. Are they viewers or readers on an Instagram account? What would you consider them? Seers. Taunting the seers. to try and figure out what it is. I can't tell. It looks like it's got a lot of flux capacitor aspects to it.
It's because of it. He broke Clara's vacuum and he's trying to put it back together and accidentally created a hole that sucked time through it.
It maybe it's the squidgy console. That's how it works.
Oh, underneath the feely controls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. just another reason why I don't want to touch that thing. But, you know, it just scribble some nonsensical mathematical diagrams on there. You know, a couple of formulas that actually derive into nothing. And anything that's actually written in English, scrawl it really poorly so you can't even tell if it's
right.
Really.
Well, and part of the equation is a question mark, so...
that's not going to break down well.
If it's in English, yeah.
And I think down in the bottom left corner kind of looks like the Deathly Hallows.
So I was not just thinking that, yeah.
Or something that Coulson would have scrawled into the wall with a knife. So,
yeah.
So he's looking for the Elder Wand in Adelan. Okay. Yeah. It's all coming together now.
It's all
connected. Essentially how just to drive your fan base nuts.
Yeah, and he has to travel through 221 Baker Street to get there. That's the loophole. Mm.
I did like the fact that the writer here for the Radio Times theorized that it could have been taking Perkins' recommendation on Mummy of the Orient Express that the Doctor had to replace the drive stacks on the TARDIS. So he's finally getting there. Yeah, I should have gotten around to that. Yeah. But then they had actually in the Instagram post, they had asked fans whether this was a continuum shifter, whatever the hell it is. So you gotta think, if they are actually throwing a breadcrumb out there and it is going to be referred to as something like a continuum shifter. Now the next question is, well, what the hell does that thing do? So go ahead, have fun with it, internets.
Yeah, I'm thinking that continuum shifter is probably something they opened up a book of technobabble and rolled a D20 and said, all right, that one.
Reverse the polarity.
Well, we also have some other looks into Series 9 with a video interview with Michelle Gomez and Ingrid Oliver.
Mm-hmm. And it's nothing spoilery.
Right, it's just a minute-long video. I mean, mm-hmm. Nothing too in-depth.
Yeah, just kind of recaps where we left both characters. You know, one sort of maniacally triumphant, the other a pile of ash, you know. And just some quick statements from both actors about their experience working on Series 8 and how excited they are to be returning for Series 9, especially Ingrid Oliver, because she had been not only heartbroken when she went into shoot that day and realized on the first read through that her character was going to be killed, and Moffat laughed at her when she looked sad. But then her ability to be able to return, she's very careful about saying, you know, about the character returning or her returning. So watch it for yourself and discern what you will, because these folks are very well screened on what they should or shouldn't say. And yeah, and just looking forward to seeing them both back very early on in the next season, which is coming up in 19 days.
Woohoo!
Well, and then what happens after Series 9 is over? What do we have to look forward to at that point? Well, apparently we have Legos!
Are you excited?
Just a touch.
Just a smidge.
It's not really moving the needle forward too much as far as some of the stuff we had talked about, back in... When did we first hear about this? June, maybe?
Earlier? I think it was longer ago than that.
Well,
the official word, I guess.
Right. When they had the I don't even know how you pronounce it anymore. They've changed the name of it. It used to be the KUSU.
Yeah, KUSU.
KUSU Voting Labs. Well, they changed that name over, but you know, obviously they had we got the first report when they had gotten enough votes to put it to prototype. And then I guess we've just gotten a little bit more word about what sets are going to be produced initially. So I guess what we'll have, like, a TARDIS interior, Cybermen. We will have a K-9, I think, theorizing that we should have a K-9 because they're going to try to link it to some of the character representations that'll be in Lego Dimensions.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just they're starting off with just a couple of small sets, nothing huge, but it is the beginning of the line. Yeah. This is the first few sets of what is going to turn into a full blown line of Legos. So I'm so excited about this. It's, you know, now I can feel even more guilty about buying Legos, but not because I'm stealing my kids, because I'm just going to buy these for myself outright.
Right. These ones will never be left on the carpet. I kind of wonder, though, you know, we never got any official word from those folks over at Character Builders, who have always built the little minifigs mm-hmm. sets up to this point. You know, and they had kind of tapered off. They hadn't really, I hadn't seen anything new come out from them since about, let's say maybe series 6 or so, when they did some Weeping Angels sets and things like that. But I don't know. Maybe they've just completely backed off now they realize that Lego's going to be in the game and they're focusing on other franchises. It's too bad because I never really completed getting a lot of my sets.
Yeah, I still need a Capaldi. I've got the first 11. I need Capaldi.
Exactly. So if anyone's got a good line on those that we can get them, even overseas, we've got connections, but we need to track down our 12th Doctor. Yeah. Anyway.
Moving right along.
Yep.
Laser focus tonight, people. So the next big thing coming from Big Finish is their Torchwood series that we've gotten really excited about. And we now get our first look at that, or listen. That. We get our earballs on it for the first time.
Yep, so got a couple promotional trailers out there. You'll have to get them either from Big Finish's site or in the link that we'll provide in the notes there. You'll be able to listen to one of their official drop trailers. And you get to hear voices in there. You got Barrowman, it's good to hear him, good to hear Jack. And in your head, you can close your eyes and still picture him 6 years younger. Just put the put the other images from Arrow out of your head. And picture him in his coat again. But speaking of putting characters in different points in their timeline, last little piece of news that we have here is some sort of an odd wish from the Ratty Burville himself, Arthur Darvill.
Yeah, so he has come forward and said that he would like to return to Doctor Who as kind of a geriatric reunion. So basically he wants the Doctor to run into him as an old man.
Right. Which they've played with the pawns in there. Well, last time we saw old Rory, he was not looking so good.
No.
Dying in a TARDIS corridor somewhere.
No, actually, the last time we saw him aged was when he was dying in the Angel's battery.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's true. Yep. So they've done this to him a couple of times.
Yeah.
We love putting him in prosthetics.
But, I mean, they've done it to everybody. I mean, they did it to Matt Smith. They did it to Jenna Coleman. They did it to Amy. Mm-hmm. Karen Gillan.
Peter Capaldi's actually only 32 years old. They've just had him in makeup since he was hired.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's been years. He hasn't even washed it off. It's just become part of him now. It's actually kind of nasty. But yeah, there's no official basis for this or anything. It's just Arthur Darvill basically saying, hey, you know what? I'm open to the idea and I'd like to come back. So do we expect anything to come of this? Not really.
Absolutely not. But it's interesting that unlike other alumni who just say I'd love to be able to come back, just drop my character in there somewhere, or just have him pass through a scene where my character is there before they've met the Doctor, and they don't realize that they're sort of an extra in there just for fun. But instead of that, he's thought this through and said no, I want you to come back and actually kind of cross paths with them again, but I want them really old this time. So. Leave it to Darvill to think along those lines. He's outside the box.
Yeah, but if you absolutely need to see more of Arthur Darvill, definitely check out the Legends of Tomorrow, which is coming out this year, where he plays Rip Hunter, time traveler from the future. That I don't know where they got the idea to cast him for that, because that's just ridiculous.
It's ludicrous.
Nobody would ever buy that. Yeah. But honestly, he actually looks like it's going to be a great role for him. I can't wait to see that one.
Yeah.
But, all right. Well, that's all the news that we've got for this week, and that wraps us up for the week as well. You guys have anything to say closing this out?
On this particular arc, I don't know. I think it's just it's great to see that, because we had films from the 80s, 90s, and one from 2009, and it's good to see that the whole concept of time travel films or programs or anything like that continue to be played with.
Mm-hmm.
Since it's something that's so far out of our grasp right now, as far as any sort of scientific reality, as far as we can determine, it's still at the forefront of a lot of writers' imagination.
Yeah.
And I think that's a rewarding to see.
I had no idea that this movie existed before we decided to talk about it. And I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I'm seriously, it has spawned something for me. And I want to go and I want to find all the time travel movies that I haven't watched in a while. And go back and revisit them now and just really start to look into the mechanics of the time travel and things like that and just see the different ways that it can be approached and how different writers take it and things like that. Because if you look at this, even the three movies that we've got, there are definite similarities that are just, these are accepted as fact, even though there's absolutely no basis for it aside from everybody thinks that way. So
the conventional wisdom of time travel. Yeah. That's not accurate. Well, how can any of this be accurate? Come on.
So, I mean, I'm seriously, I'm going to find Looper. I'm going to, you know, go watch the Time Machine. I mean, everything that I can find, I'm just going to start digging into because it's fun. It
all
really
the Terminator
is.
Films. You got to go do a full Terminator rewatch now.
Oh, geez. Does it have to be full? Can I stop at 2?
Yes.
Okay.
Everyone else does.
Except for Hollywood, bastards.
Right.
Should write them an angry letter.
Strongly worded. Movement.
Just keep it laminated, all right? Just make it watertight. if listeners have recommendations of lesser known films, you know, like we would consider frequently asked to be sort of in that category, ones that may have passed under even, you know, our radar as we scour for these things, tip us off to them. And if you didn't get a chance to see Frequently Asked, it is on Amazon Instant Watch for those of you who have Prime accounts, so it's accessible there. Yeah,
it's about the only spot you can find it, other than like DVD or something, but yeah.
I want instant gratification, and since Netflix doesn't have it, Amazon's my go-to.
Exactly. It's definitely worth it, though, but... So next week we're going to do something a little bit weird, and you know we've all had that moment.
We do the weird stuff.
we've all had that moment of sitting down and watching something, and all of a sudden you're taken completely out of the story because holy crap, there's this person from Doctor Who on there, and what are they doing in a show like this? And so you know, guest stars on Doctor Who are not anything new. I mean, it happens almost every week where it's like, hey, look, it's that guy from Game of Thrones, or it's, you know, dude man from this movie over there. And yeah, so that we're used to, but seeing people that you understand, like this is Rose, this is Martha, this is the Doctor, seeing them in an element that is not Doctor Who can be very jarring. Mm-hmm. So we decided to take a look at the reverse and find the moments that really stood out to us with the, you know, seeing David Tennant in Harry Potter and thinking, what's the Doctor doing into Harry Potter? And, you know, things like that really stood out to you. Those moments where it just, you know, it was so strange to see this character outside of the show they're supposed to be in.
And this doesn't necessarily have to be, I guess this is, correct me if I'm wrong, we're sort of framing this as a little more unexpected appearances so that it's not like Karen Gillan
as Nebula,
Guardians.
Yeah. Right, so, or Christopher Eccleston and Thor, even though you never would have known had they not told you.
Yeah, really, because he never actually utters a line of English.
So, pretty much.
What a great gig. I could just grumble.
Probably Karen Gillan, too. You wouldn't have known if they hadn't told you that's who it was.
I could recognize her.
Even painted blue and with crap.
It might have taken me a minute. It might have taken me a minute, but you could tell that was still like her face, and it would have been one of those like, why does she look so familiar? And then you know, after scouring IMDb, you figure it out.
But just you know, from the some of her deliveries are just inherently hers. The thanks, Dad, snarky thing as she stomps out of the room, kind of thing. That's you say, oh well, okay, yeah, that's Karen all over. But no, these we're thinking more about the ones where, you know, they play some sort of a secondary or tertiary character, or they're just in there for a moment. I know there was, there was a film I saw a couple of years ago, this really kind of gritty British cop drama thing that apparently Matt Smith was in. And
he decapitated somebody with a katana, right?
Yeah. So really unexpected, very much out of character for the Doctor.
Yeah, I remember that. But yeah, I mean, if you've had that moment, then definitely write in, let us know, you know, get a hold of us on any of the social medias or emails or voicemail, whatever you want to, whatever your chosen poison is, and let us know what your standout moment was. And please don't, obviously knew who was going to be the more prevalent, but I mean, classic Who as well. I know there's a couple of classic characters that I've definitely had that moment with it myself, and I'll bring those up next week because I'm not going to ruin the show yet.
Spoilers.
We've already recorded it 5 weeks from now. I don't even know.
Yeah. So definitely write in, let us know what you've got. And, I look forward to hearing what comes out of this.
We like figuring out what comes out of our mouths too.
So do the doctors. It's kind of got them baffled at this point, but they keep bringing me back for more tests. All right. Well, this has been a very special episode, 150 of Gallifrey Public Radio. We've been doing this for 150 episodes, guys.
So old.
It's almost as if we've been doing one a week
for like three years. It's crazy.
With a couple of gaps where we were all hungover, maybe.
All right. Until next week, this is Jay saying, I need to go use the restroom. I'll be back in about 2 weeks ago.
And this is Kira saying, always remember that we are a science fiction podcast, not sci-fi.
Sometimes SF, which can also stand for speculative fiction.
Nerd.
Imagineer. And this is Haley saying, my thing is sitting on my arse reading books about this not actually being in it.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2015.